There we go. Are we all in there?
I'm here.
It's kind of quiet on my end. I guess I got to...
Mic check.
Turn my sound up.
Oh, I hear you.
You are joining We the People Radio here on a rainy afternoon, which is nice. Nice in Northern California to be able to say we're here on a rainy afternoon.
On a rainy, drought-stricken
exactly.
Afternoon, yeah.
Guess we're not going to die after all. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
Who we caught unaware. We are connecting our guests. We have one via Skype, and we have another one who's going to be on the phone. So while we're getting that all squared away, I thought I would, for those of you that are not online or did not get the email blast that we sent out ahead of time, I hope you'll sign up for that, though. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will... access the website, and I don't send out a whole bunch of stuff. I just send out a promotion before any show that is something that I really know that you guys want to hear. And this came to me in an email from Lyle Rapacki, one of our guests. And it says, mentioned below are comments captured and spliced together from multiple postings on Facebook, and similar social media platforms. These are an example only of the type of communicated messages beginning to appear more frequently and brazenly across the United States. One intent for sharing this example only communication is to expose the mindset of terrorists now stepping up their focus on America. As a training vehicle, he's asking for, you know, people who are getting this, what are their thoughts? And he works a lot with law enforcement, and we'll get into that in a minute. But this is what the thing said. Good evening, Americans. I'm from the Islamic State, and I'm here to annihilate your children. While you have preoccupied yourself with messaging your Facebook friends from your student pickup area at your local religious school, I've been surveilling my target. The first thing I noticed when arriving at your children's school were the gun-free zone signs posted around the perimeter, advising that there is no one inside that has the ability to stop me. When I decide to gun down your children, I know I'll go unchallenged until the arrival of law enforcement. I'm aware of their response times because I've made false reports over the course of the last several months and timed their response. I also read in your local paper that they are understaffed by hundreds of officers. This morning, I pulled into a parking space with a good view of the cluster of gathered children and observed their movements throughout the entry point of the school. I've noted the time the gates open and the time the largest gathering of students occurs. I noticed most of you... we're paying attention to your cell phones. The one person who with a concerned face that actually did notice what I was doing quickly looked away when we made eye contact. The best part is they will not report the encounter for fear of being labeled a racist, xenophobic, or paranoid. Nothing confirmed it more than the coexist bumper sticker plastered across the back of their car. My brothers and I are going to ensure that your schools make headlines worldwide. The pictures of little Jewish kids wearing yarmulkes and little Christian children with crosses around their necks will all be plastered across the front page of every news outlet in the world. Our attacks will be talked about endlessly by terrorism experts, used as training examples in public safety courses, and splashed across every form of social media for years. I may even get the honor of making the cover of Rolling Stone magazine, like Dokar Tsarnaev. We will fill every city across the nation with memorials to the dead. We'll ensure every day is the anniversary of a terror attack. The day following the attacks, masses of parents will withdraw their children from religious schools across the nation. The religious education for a generation of children will be over. Politicians will hold press conferences expressing public outrage while pocketing money taken from our Saudi supporters. Your women will change their Facebook avatars to an American flag overlay, and your men will post a meme of a Spartan warrior as they flop down on the couch, crack open a beer, and watch your national anthem song while the players kneel in protest of your country. The people you have entrusted your safety to have been handcuffed. Our brothers operating non-governmental organizations have ensured that you can't even mention our ideology in intelligence reports, and instead refer to our ideology in nebulous terms like violent extremists or homegrown violent extremists. The people guarding your borders have been stood down by their superiors. We now actually seek agents out so we can claim amnesty and penetrate your defenses. Lastly, while my family is being honored in my home country for this great jihad, your politicians will be introducing legislation to disarm any future Americans that could potentially rise up to stop us. You are weak. You are defenseless, and you can't stop us.
That's frightening.
I've only read that to myself, like, quietly, and somehow reading it out loud was a million times creepier. Okay, so status check. Who do we have on with us? Do we have everyone?
I believe we do.
Oh, my gosh. Well, all right, so while I was doing, you know, War of the Worlds there, we were adding Dr. Lyle Rapacki to our show here. He's the one who sent me the email, actually. He's the author, and he's got some interesting information about the beginning of that email, for sure. He's a private sector intelligence, behavior analysis, and threat assessment specialist, and I get all of his reports under Sentinel. What is it? Sentinel, help me, Lyle.
Intelligence services.
Sentinel intelligence services. I knew it was Sentinel something, and it had intelligence in it.
Well, I'm just lucky I got through. I'm having technical problems.
I was really trying hard not to pay attention to you guys. It's like, all right, I'm just going to keep reading this scary email. And then we also have Claire Lopez with us. She's the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She's got a giganto resume. They both do. And I have posted both of those online for you. I figured I'd let you guys add what was pertinent to your resume for this discussion. Because, I mean, we don't want people to think that we're having a what-if conversation with folks who don't know. I mean, you guys are qualified to say that that's all absolutely waiting for us down the line.
Well, I'll defer to Claire because she outranks me. She's and she always gets upset with me when I say something like that.
Claire.
She's on the A-list, and I just kind of carry her luggage at times.
That's awesome. Start with the rabbit punch, Claire. Go for it.
Okay. Well, I will apologize in advance because I am today in South Dakota, in Rapid City, South Dakota, where I spoke to some legislators yesterday. Local state legislators, and also a wonderful group of citizens last night. But today, we are driving up into the Black Hills to go see Mount Rushmore.
And nice.
So I am not completely sure how long the connection will hold, but until it does, or as long as it does, I'll just say that, you know, what Lyle spelled out there in that piece that you just read is you know, in large part what a lot of Americans are concerned about, and realistic as to what we're facing. We are at war. Probably most of our national security leadership prefers not to see that, pretends that it's not happening, calls it anything else but what it is, which is war against the enemy, is the forces of Islamic Jihad, or the Global Islamic Movement, as the Muslim Brotherhood calls it. And the pace is indeed picking up, both here and, as we've seen, certainly in Western Europe, too. So the concerns are real, and the need for our local law enforcement in particular to be informed and to step up to the plate, to be the first line of defense, or maybe it's the last line of defense, is critical. So that's where we are.
How much feedback are you getting from local sheriffs and police agencies in the country? I mean, are they? I'm sure they're aware that there's a risk here, but are they fully on board with the magnitude of this whole thing?
Well, it's a real mixed bag, I have to tell you. In addition to my work at the Center for Security Policy, which is a think tank in Washington, D.C., I also partner with John Guandolo at Understanding the Threat. That's online at understandingthethreat.com. And we provide training courses, particularly to law enforcement across the country, but also speak to citizens groups. And like the center also, try to reach out now more and more to local faith community leaders, because these are the key people that will be necessary, local citizens, faith leaders, and local law enforcement, to confront what is really an insurgency within our midst. And the mixed bag part of that is that in some places, like Arizona, where Lyle has helped us tremendously with contacts and introductions, we've had a great welcome and a very receptive audience from law enforcement and the private citizens. And that is true in other places around the country, but there are still more where it's not the case at all, and where the Muslim Brotherhood has made such inroads with the local law enforcement leadership or municipal leadership that, for instance, city council or mayor appoints the police chief, let's say, they really are, willfully blind. I mean, that's the only way to put it. Prefer to keep their heads down in the sand.
So are you saying that members of the Muslim Brotherhood are involved with local law enforcement? And,
oh, definitely, and yes. Extensively so, across
really?
The country.
On what yes. levels?
At the sheriff level, deputy sheriff level, mayor and governor level, United States congressional level.
Wow.
And also police chief, city council level, all of the above.
So are they, I'm sure it's probably a little bit of both, but maybe you can give us an idea of the magnitude, influencing policy from the outside or participating as players on the inside?
Well, what the heck? These leadership figures just
moved. I think she was just captured by Mount Rushmore.
Uh-oh. Let me, if I could jump
yeah.
in.
Fire away, Lyle, till...
While Claire gets a second breath there.
It doesn't take that long to look at Mount Rushmore. I've done it a couple times.
a little over a year ago, I held a private briefing here in Arizona. I asked Claire, John Gondola, who we work with, and Frank Gaffney, who is an undersecretary of defense in the Reagan administration, who established the Center for Security Policy, which Claire is one of the vice presidents of. I asked them to come to Arizona, and in a secure setting, I arranged for a one-day briefing. In this briefing, I had personally invited legislators from five Western states, also invited counterterrorism officials, key law enforcement officials that showed up from three states, and then also some selected elected and citizen, what I'm going to call citizen, public citizens, people who have large constituencies, maybe executive directors of an organization, for instance. Altogether, there were 90 people in a secure setting. In this setting, Claire, John Gondola, Frank Gaffney, myself, but I was mostly the MC, presented to these folks gathered really clear intelligence, not opinions, not philosophies, not theories, but hardcore, actionable, what's called actionable intelligence, from which legislation could pursue and from which law enforcement could then begin to step up and be a little bit more assertive in their areas of responsibility and authority. I said to the gathered audience that by the end of the day, it was my impression that they would leave this briefing very different. They would leave actually a little bit more quiet, a little bit more subdued. Now, mind you, we had legislators from five states, senators, representatives, senior law enforcement people, and counterterrorism. All of these folks are used to sitting through briefings and meetings. It's just a lifestyle. For them to leave at the end of the day, which was around 4:30, and to walk out somewhat subdued was really different. They're not used to that. They're used to taking information in and still having a fairly nice day and being able to kind of joke on the way out. That's not my impression as they left that day. They were a little bit more subdued. I attribute that to John and Claire and, of course, Frank, who gave very actionable, hard-hitting, no-nonsense intelligence as to, based on your question, Aaron, or maybe it was Bob who asked, how far-reaching have we been compromised? And as Claire was saying so eloquently, at all levels, all 16 intelligence agencies in the United States have been compromised. Our entire executive branch of the United States has been compromised. Congress has been compromised all the way down. We do know that local law enforcement also is under the influence of Muslim Brotherhood, because they'll establish something like the Muslim Brotherhood Law Enforcement Advisory Committee. Sounds kind of innocuous, but what they end up doing is enforcing their jihad into the local establishment, both through mayors, city councilmen, and law enforcement. And what they're hoping to accomplish is what they've done in Europe, and you can see it unfolded in Europe, where they have no-go zones, where law enforcement, even fire, don't go, because they've taken over an entire neighborhood and they've turned it into a Muslim hold. So kind of in a, well Claire maybe is back on now, that's what is happening all across this country.
Before
hold that thought. We've got to take a really quick break here. Sorry, just in time for Claire to get back. Did you see Rushmore when you drove by, Claire?
We're not quite there yet. We're still climbing the hill. So. I'll do my best here.
Just kidding. All righty. We'll take a really quick break. Join us online if you have time. If you're in today in the rain, wethepeopleradio.us. And we have a chat room running while we're live here. So any questions you have, you can fire us to us through there. Be right back.
Give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in.
I like
this is for Claire.
Let me be by myself.
I like walls.
This is Claire's driving song.
Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you, please, don't fence me in.
Exactly.
Just
unless
fence them out.
Unless you're a terrorist, in which case, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so enough goofing off. We're back. I don't know which one of you wants to tackle that. We were just discussing
Could I finish something before we – because Claire's she always has great insights. The reason, and this follows up on what Claire was alluding to, the reason we had so many different folks there, legislators, community leaders, counterterrorism, all that, we put them together deliberately because Claire is absolutely right. They have infiltrated almost every aspect, and law enforcement is struggling to figure out what they can do that would be politically acceptable. Normally, in the past, you don't have that sort of a problem, but this is such a political football because it's been made a political football by the current administration and even others on both sides of the aisles, that now it's filtered on down to the local level where people are afraid to move because they're afraid that they're going to be accused of some sort of phobia.
Sure.
And this now comes out to the law enforcement people out on the street where they're afraid to actually function because they're going to get called or lose their jobs or even worse, get sued in some way. So it's become a paralyzing factor in our United States at all levels. And Claire's right, what we've worked on, John Gondolo, Claire, myself, Frank, and others, is trying to get a community awareness level, a synergy, if you will, with pastors and community leaders supporting mayors and city councilmen so they believe they have the support that's necessary. And then city councilmen and mayors supporting the police chiefs and the police, which they need to have so they can move on. And then likewise, state legislators supporting city councilmen, et cetera, et cetera. So it's all tied in there together. It's a really a complex little web, but we have to do this to get the synergy to offset what Muslim Brotherhood has done, which is very sophisticated, by the way.
Well, they've done an exceptionally good job in understanding how our system works
and shutting us all up.
Oh yeah, and where they can have the biggest impact on affecting policy, law enforcement, and so forth. So you got to hand it to them there. While we've sat and watched it all, well, we didn't watch it all happen. I think in a lot of cases they didn't know it was happening. But here we are. So what do we do with that, Lyle?
Or Claire?
Well, I think it's at two levels. I mean, and I'd like Claire to jump in on this because she's seeing the same thing at the congressional level where she briefs leading congressional and senatorial people. We're having the same problem there. Not to steal the thunder from her, but she can speak to this, but we're having the same problem at the federal level we are at the local level and vice versa. In fact, that's one of the things that brought Claire and me together, I think 6 years ago, Claire, I think it was, where at the local level, I was reading what she was doing at the federal level, and I was saying, we're having the problems down here already, and if it filters down from the federal level, it won't be very long before we're going to have mass political paralysis. Well, here we are about 6 years later, 7 years later, when I became first aware of it, and that's what we have. So it's critical that first of all, very valid training goes out. Not opinions, not theories, philosophies, and all that crap that you see a lot of times on the internet.
Right.
But very valid training, very solid training. And it needs to get out to the right key decision makers, which would be pastors, city leaders, community leaders. It could be the head of the some community group, let's say. And that's what I did is I brought in selective community leaders as well as elected officials and law enforcement officials. They have to come together to support one another. And then Claire, I think, really can give us some insight from the federal level because she's dealing with that at the congressional level.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lyle's exactly right. But we understand that in an insurgency, and that is what we're facing an insurgency within the borders of the United States. The answer is to be found at the local level. The answer is not going to come from Capitol Hill. Yes, we work with congressional leaders. We'll brief whomever would like to have us brief them. But the answer is really going to come from the local level because that's the level at which an insurgency is fought. And again, back to those key pillars of society, as I think of them, the local citizens, the faith leaders, and the local law enforcement. Now, as we've said, Lyle and I both have said that in too many places already, the Muslim Brotherhood Network has already reached and compromised with information operations. That's what we're talking about, information operations, compromised some of these local people. Faith leaders were targeted a long time ago with the Interfaith Dialogue Movement to co-opt ministers, priests, rabbis, so that they come to value their friendship with their newfound, you know, Muslim Brotherhood BFS over, you know, the fate of their own co-religionists being slaughtered over in the Middle East and other places. And they don't talk about that. And they don't talk about what the actual agenda of the Islamic movement is, which the Brotherhood lays out so clearly in its own publicized documents. And many of these, of course, made known to us through the 2008 Holy Land Foundation trial. But that objective, absolutely identical with the objectives of Al-Qaeda, Boko Haram, Islamic State, Hamas, Hezbollah, Taliban, you name it. Doesn't matter if the group is violent jihadi or suit-wearing jihadi, their objectives are the same. Destruction of Western civilization, destruction of the United States from within. And so they have already co-opted and reached too many of our local leadership in these key areas. And what we're doing now, trying to do to fight back against this insurgency, is to reach out selectively to those who welcome us, to those who, you know, have open open ears for the message and to try to bring together a coalition of those local leadership figures to form an effective strategic operational and tactical at all three levels counter jihad force.
Aren't you finding, Claire, that local law enforcement and community leaders and local politicians are struggling with this by not having the support of on the federal side? Because I think the federal side, without them more or less giving them a green light, are kind of tying their hands. They're afraid to do anything.
Well, they're also dishing out a whole bunch of refugees to them.
Yeah.
It is all of the above, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But in the final analysis, the local level does have the power to fight back. What they might be seeing is certainly support from the federal level, but they're not expecting that anymore anyway.
They've
given up on that. The threat, of course, is when, you know, the federal level, like Department of Justice, comes down legally against, let's say, a sheriff like Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Maricopa County in Arizona.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
When they come after him. Now, more often than not, it is just a complete difference of approach and of operations between federal level and local level. Federal level aggressive, pursuit of the local sheriff or whomever it may be, is less the case, and more the case that they're simply not helpful. There's no good communication. There's no good exchange of information or sharing of the kind of information that would be helpful to the local level. And that's where we come in to fill in with that information and fill in some of those gaps for them.
What are you finding at the congressional level? Are they receptive to the message, or does everybody just kind of want to stay out of it because it's a giant
football? Most congressional members have a huge range of issues on which they need to be current. Transportation, education, health care, you name it. And, by the way, national security, too. And so it's difficult for them, and they often rely heavily on staff. Many times that staff, the staff themselves are really good, hardworking, patriotic young folks, but without a lot of world experience in these kinds of issues, at least. And so with some exceptions, it's tough to reach most congressional members, be they senators or congressmen, but there are several outstanding exceptions to that. I'll name, of course, Louie Gohmert out of Texas and Trent Franks out of Arizona and Scott Perry out of Pennsylvania. I mean, these are just standouts for us, and I don't mean to be missing a whole bunch of others, but there are fewer of them than those who have their attention elsewhere.
Sure. And
I think that's one of the struggles. Claire, correct me. You and I have talked about this as we've put some of these together, but that's actually been one of our struggles. Claire's, myself, John, Frank, all these same people, and others, Bridget, Gabrielle, and others, is finding elected officials, regardless of level, federal, state, local, regardless. Same thing with law enforcement, regardless, federal, state, whatever. Finding those individuals who are already not compromised or are willing to take the steps to learn some things. They're so overwhelmed by just the normal ebb and flow of their jobs that now you bring in something that they have to learn from the grassroots up. And sometimes that's easier said than done because it overwhelms them. And I'm not making fun of them.
We have the same problem
with all legislators. I started out 7 years ago advising selected members of the Arizona legislature on border security. And one of the things that was just very quickly clear to me was that you had to be extremely concise, and you had to give them, and no pun intended here, you had to give it to them in a seventh grade level, not because they're not smart. Don't do that. They are. But they're so overwhelmed with the minutia of so many of a myriad of issues that to get their attention and then to hold it, you had to give whatever you're presenting to them in an extremely palatable format. Well, when you're talking about this issue of actual infiltration, it's not that easy to whittle it down. Now, Claire's better at it than I am, and I'm not being funny. She really is. But going back to what she was also saying, General Boykin, Jerry Boykin, Lieutenant General, retired Boykin, who started Delta Force and all that, he talked about just this last weekend the explanatory memorandum that Claire was alluding to. And this is an explanatory memorandum, that's what it's titled, that the Muslim Brotherhood has laid out in great detail. They have an actual document that talks about how they will systematically, orchestrationally, I think I just coined a word, orchestrationally.
You're true.
We were gonna
roll with that. If Bill said it,
myself.
If Bill said it, I was gonna jump in, but it was you, so I was gonna give you a pass.
I just heard myself, and I went, "Wow, wait a minute! I don't think that's a word. I think I just
like Mike Tyson."
William Buckley would be proud of me. Anyway, it's so well orchestrated that it talks about how Muslim Brotherhood, through its various branches, will go ahead and spread Sharia into every segment of America, including the church. And that's what we've been talking about here, is getting the different areas brought together so they're no longer stovepipe, they're no longer not cross-talking. And this is one of the other problems in law enforcement, is that there hasn't been a lot of reaching over the aisle. There was some for a good couple of years after 9/11. But unfortunately, from my perspective, this is just my opinion, law enforcement, the various intelligence agencies have gone back to not sharing, not really cooperating on the exchange of intelligence. And the Muslim Brotherhood, CARE, Hamas, I mean, you just go down the whole list, they're counting on that. They are counting on people not coming together, city councilmen talking to police chiefs and city councilmen not talking to a legislator. And in our briefing, we did it again in Texas, Claire will remember, a couple of months later, I purposely wanted to have law enforcement people sitting next to legislators. That's, you know, they don't do that. They're a little gun shy of doing that. Law enforcement is very cautious about being singled out and saying that they're trying to be political or they're trying to do one-upsmanship or move up the ladder. There's all this ridiculousness, but I purposely at the luncheon had counterterrorism people sitting next to legislators, sitting next to a couple of pastors, sitting next to some civilian leaders on by design. We did that because I needed them to start talking to one another. It's a
great
idea.
It's
a rather uphill battle. Yes, sir.
See, it's interesting because we have a, they call it North State Sheriffs, but it's really North State Law Enforcement, meets probably quarterly. I think at the worst case scenario is like three times a year, but usually it's quarterly. And it's everyone in law enforcement, you know, or a representative from their agency north of Sacramento, so the top half of the state. So you have, you know, FBI, you have the crime lab, you have DEA, you have local police chiefs, all the sheriffs from all the counties. And they do have representatives from the state, the assembly, the congressional office, not usually the federal Senate. We haven't seen them in, geez, I don't know. Have we ever seen them up this far?
Do we have a Senate?
Yeah. Feinstein and Boxer are not big Northern California travelers. I'm not sure they actually know the freeway goes this far.
We paid them to move to D.C.
Yeah, we keep them as far away as possible. But, no, they did do these meetings, and they're very, very helpful. I know that they share a lot of information with each other, so that's actually, I can report to those listening in Northern California, at least our law enforcement and legislators all do communicate together. We have to take one more really quick break here, and then we're going to come back. Claire, are you getting closer?
We are.
Can you see the guys?
We certainly are. We'll see.
All right, we want a full report to make sure Obama hasn't gotten himself on there yet.
I heard they were chiseling out a spot.
I'll let you know.
Okay. We'll be right back. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. For us, beauty lies in people that are smart. The rest is all subjective. All right. Bill has a question for you.
I've got a question. You know, we talked about the basic infiltration of America by hostile folks. Do you have any numbers on the amount or the numbers of people coming across or coming into the country who, you know, legally and illegally, who pose a threat to our local communities?
You know, what I would say is that the original members of the Muslim Brotherhood who founded the original organizations, the front groups here in the United States, they came into the country one way or another legally and established themselves here. Now, the threat is not so much that infiltration coming in across borders illegally or slipping somehow through ports of entry illegally. It is rather the communities of Sharia-adherent Muslims already living among us, among whom are some number, don't know what number, percentage, whatever that may be, of Muslims who are already here legally, citizens, living among us, who hear and answer the call to the highest level of devotion of Islam, and that is jihad.
Okay.
That's what we were afraid of. Thanks for clearing that up. So talk about some of this this refugee business. You know, I think we all figure that they're using the refugee thing to, you know, sneak into the country and set up. But, of course, there's a, you know, huge push against that. Oh, of course not. They're just running away from war and blah, blah, blah. But what do you say?
Right. Well, the Federal Refugee Resettlement Program, and I'll speak to that specifically rather than the full range of other kinds of immigration, of which there are several. But in terms of refugee resettlement, first of all, let me point you and your listeners in the direction of Anne Corcoran and her very excellent website, the blog she keeps at Refugee Resettlement Watch. You'll find daily information posted there about the full spectrum of refugee resettlement in this country. But the way it is run, it depends on the United Nations, whose High Commission on Refugees has the responsibility in the world for setting up refugee camps, screening and interviewing refugees, and deciding which among them will be selected for resettlement onward elsewhere. And then the UNHCR discusses with the U.S. State Department how many each year the U.S. will take in. Now, we know that the Obama administration has said they would like to take 110,000 in this new fiscal year. We've just begun on the 1st of October. And so at that point, the Department of State actually contracts by the head with a number of key contractors. Many of these are faith-based groups like Methodist and Lutheran Social Services and Hebrew Aid Society, or Catholic Charities, which actually run more like a business than a charity or a religious organization, on a contractual by-the-head basis to resettle refugees. And then they set up an office or rely on an office already set up in some local jurisdiction around the country and simply bring the refugees in. And unfortunately, the way that federal law is written right now, the local state governments, legislatures, never mind the county, government or city or township level, have no real say-so. The federal law says something to the effect of, you ought to consult with them. It would be a good thing to consult with them or some such. But it's not mandatory. So let me make a plug. In my role as a private citizen here, not as a vice president of a 501c3, which the center is, but as Claire Lopez, private citizen, I would encourage your listeners to take a look at a new bill that Representative Scott Perry out of Pennsylvania in the Gettysburg area proposed just a couple months ago. And that bill would make it mandatory that the states, the governors, and the local people would have a say-so in the refugee resettlement process. How many refugees, from where, at what pace do they come in? How well can they be absorbed? Are there sufficient services? All these things. And most importantly, perhaps, according to this bill, if it's passed, they would have veto power over any of the above, the numbers, the pace, the origins, the screening process. So that is something that I think if people got behind that.
Do we have a bill number by any chance?
No, there's no bill number yet assigned that I know of. But if you go to Scott Perry's own website,
okay,
that bill will be there, and its wording, and you can take a look at it. It's not terribly long, but it's quite specific that states and local people, governments, will have a say-so in the refugee resettlement process. And I think that is so critical for managing this going forward.
So you're saying that under the federal resettlement program currently in effect, states have no say as to whether or not they can or cannot accept refugees that are being planted in their cities. That's really nice.
That is correct.
What would you say is a bigger threat right now? The resettlement of refugees or the infiltration of folks like the Brotherhood settling in our local governments and police forces and so forth?
Well, I think the most critical threat to be addressed immediately by an incoming new presidential administration should be to address the jihadist Muslim Brotherhood infiltration of our national security. I think that would set the stage for everything else after it.
Yeah, because they're in positions of power that can really influence what we're able to do to fight this threat.
Yeah, and they do. And as I've said, the way it is now, our National Security Council, our White House, our State Department, our Department of Homeland Security, preferentially and even exclusively deal only with Muslim Brotherhood front groups, especially Hamas. Hamas in America, of course, doing business as CAIR, that is CAIR, Council on American Islamic Relations, which is Hamas in America. Preferentially doing business with them, relying on them for advice, relying on them for training. That would all stop were a new administration to take a good, solid look at what information operations mean, what the Brotherhood is doing. And again, the Brotherhood is not acting in a terrorist capacity inside the United States at all.
Yet.
They're not terrorists at all. Yeah. They're subversives, and that's way more dangerous.
So, and isn't Hamas, haven't they proven that they're being funded by the mullahs in Iran?
Well, in Gaza, certainly, the Tehran regime assists the Gaza regime of Hamas. Hamas, of course, in Gaza is the Palestinian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. The relationship with Tehran has been off again, on again. Of course, there was a big rift at the time that the uprising began against Bashar al-Assad in the former Syria, where Hamas up until that point had its offices located, its headquarters in Damascus.
Lovely.
And of course, that caused a rift, and so it goes back and forth. But over time, the important thing to remember is that all jihadis fight for the very same cause:
yes.
A global Islamic government under Sharia. And it doesn't matter if they're Shiite jihadis or Sunni jihadis; they all want that same thing.
All right, we're going to take a break.
Same end.
We're going to pick up on this when we get back from the break.
Absolutely. The news is going to cut us off here for 5 minutes. We'll be back with Lyle Rapacki and potentially Claire Lopez talking about what's going on with the Islamists in the U.S. and what you should be concerned about and watching for. Good afternoon. You are joining the second half of We the People Radio. My name's Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And there you have it. That's all the details that you need to know, except for the website, wethepeopleradio.us. And you know, if that guy who's got the .com had ever let go of it, I'd just buy it, and then we could have a .com like everyone else, huh? Be so much simpler. Anyway, we have really an interesting topic today. I know we've done a bunch of shows here of late on Islam. The last 2 weeks were about the really the biography of the prophet, or the notorious prophet, should we say, Muhammad. And so if you wonder how all of this got to the jihad part, you should really read It's All About Muhammad. That's the name of the book. It's All About Muhammad. And once you figure that out, they've been doing this from the very beginning. It's not going to change anytime soon.
No new program.
And our wonderful guests, Lyle Rapacki from, he's got a long, I'm going to read his whole list here. Protective Intelligence and Assessment Specialist, Consultant in Behavioral Analysis and Threat Assessment, Private Sector Intelligence Analysis. He's got a lot of intelligence, huh? He's a PhD, too, so I guess you have to have a lot of intelligence then. U.S. Border Intelligence Group and ASIS International, and I forget what that stands for, ASIS, and the Association for Intelligence Officers. And he works a lot with the law enforcement in Arizona. And then our new good friend Claire Lopez is on her way to look at Mount Rushmore, which will be super fun. She is the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy, a Senior Fellow at the London Center for Policy Research, and a member of the Board of Advisors of the Canadian Mackenzie Institute. And she's just been a very busy bee. She was on Ted Cruz's presidential campaign as a National Security Advisor, works with I posted here. I should actually make note during the program. I was typing here. Also added links for you, for those of you who maybe missed the first hour and you go back and you listen. UnderstandingTheThreat.com I've put on there, and all the information here about the Holy Land Foundation and Refugee Resettlement Watch and Representative Scott Perry's pending legislation in the House of Representatives. So I've got those links for you on the site. That is all. Okay.
Good job.
Claire, and that was like fast talking without mumbling. Since I'm old, see, I learned how to enunciate. The nuns were big on that. Enunciating was king. Not anymore. Like, you know, you hear the brr, 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 and you're like, what? I don't know. Old ears can't hear the young thing anymore, I guess. So where do you guys want to go for us this hour? I think we got to go back a little bit to your email, Lyle. Because while you were trying to get connected on Skype, I read it to people. The scary good evening, Americans. I'm from the Islamic State. And ladies and gentlemen, if you missed that, you should go to the website and read it. It'll curl your hair. But you had told me the other day that not only was this whole thing culled from actual intelligence that has been gathered, but do you want to share with people what happened, you know, a couple days after you released it?
Oh, sure, Aaron.
And if you don't, I'll have to just, you know, sketch around until you finally get sick of it, and then you decide to tell everyone.
You all have
for God's
sake,
she's botching it.
Up there in Northern California, is, yeah. It, is it all like this?
Guilty.
Well, I need to call a really great sheriff, John Lopey, up there and tell
yes.
him to check it out. John is just a wonderful patriot. Christian and just a great law enforcement man.
He's a good guy. I work with
him
a lot.
Well, yeah.
And our sheriff in Shasta County, Tom Basenko, would also be. I mean, those two guys would have you guys out here in a hot minute to do something.
Yeah. Well, I'll call John and see if we can set it up. I actually quote unquote met John, Sheriff Lopey, and had him testify. In the Arizona legislature telephonically, but he was sworn in and, all that stuff in a joint legislative hearing a couple of years back, several years back. And his testimony was so riveting. And you have to appreciate that was on phone, telephonic. And the hearing room had about 200, 250 people in it. And there was people outside. And what he was discussing was the effects, the reality of Agenda 21 and the draining of the lake up there by the federal government and doing other ridiculous things to seize back or take back the land from.
Oh, their county is absolutely I mean, you just couldn't find another agency to go attack them. They're all used up.
Yeah.
I think I counted one time. It's like 9 of them.
But Sheriff Lopey, excuse me, Sheriff Lopey, just I've not met him personally. We've exchanged emails, phone calls. I got to tell you, what a wonderful sheriff.
He's a super guy. We've had him on the radio a bunch of times. Tom Basenko both.
Basenko is also.
Really good, solid, patriot guys.
Really solid. You're right. Very solid sheriffs. And this is what is really going to become critical, I think, in the next so many months and year, is the sheriff. I'm also a member of Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers, and it is the sheriff that really has the constitutional authority, as Claire stated earlier, to protect and preserve the Constitution in the county. I don't know if most people know this, but the sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer of that county in which he is elected and outranks, you can look this up, outranks everyone in that county, including the president, the governor, or whatever. Now, it gets into all sorts of weirdnesses here, and I don't mean to deviate from our show, but the sheriff is the chief law enforcement officer and does have final authority in law enforcement matters in the county. And the federal government knows this very well, and this is another reason they're trying to take down lead sheriffs so they can submit them unto the umbrella of the federal government and therefore lose the sovereignty of the sheriff and the county. But that's a separate show.
Well, it is really important when people are, voting doesn't matter. And it's like, okay, that makes me freak out to start with. But the biggest vote, one of the biggest things people cast a ballot for would be their sheriff. And I'm not sure that everybody really appreciates that.
Amen.
So, good for you to bring it up.
To say. Yeah, no. The report that you're referencing, Aaron, I sent out. It was not classified. In fact, I think it's marked. It should be. I don't have it in front of me. But it should be marked open source and non-restricted and training for training purposes. The reason I released it to the public and to schools and businesses and special interests like that is because the jihadis are targeting soft targets in the United States. Soft targets are considered shopping centers, schools, churches, and they intend to bring chaos to those locations because their intent is to not only collapse the United States, but to punish the United States for all of its support against enemies, foreign and domestic, against jihad, against Islam. So they're attempting to move upon soft targets within our communities and to bring some form of destruction and chaos. That report refers to schools, and what they were doing in that report was absolutely a compilation of known interceptions of emails, other forms of information that shows that they are targeting schools, again, shopping centers and churches, by literally conducting sophisticated surveillance. They will sit outside of a school, a shopping center, a church, or some other form of soft business corporation, and they will literally look at the comings and goings. They'll look at whatever security mechanisms might be in play, if any. And they'll take a look at, even if there is security, the timing of the security, the function of the security, et cetera, et cetera. And they pretty well get a good layout of that target, just like any enemy combatant would do. And then they know how to launch an attack or an assault accordingly. 2 days, and I gave that particular report to a large school, a high school of 2,500 students, plus staff and teachers. I gave it to the principal, the administration, the assistant principals, because I was talking to them about what is coming and what's already here. 2 days after that report, after I gave them that report, and then I sent it out also, distributed it, I received a report from contacts in New York. And what they had done is they had arrested a woman who they later identified as an Islamic surveillance person who was doing just that. She was taking surveillance and photos of a school in New York City. New York City has approximately 8,000 cameras positioned in critical locations. And so while they were monitoring, they saw this woman, interestingly enough, in all of her Habib and all of the other gala, and she was outside of a school and she wasn't moving. She was just sitting there taking pictures and writing down things. So they caught her
on camera.
Not too
obvious.
Well, it was kind of bizarre. I mean, she really wasn't trying to be covert in any way.
But she wasn't breaking any laws either.
No, and that's Bill, that's a great point. If I forget to, please bring that back up again, because that's a germane point. So they interdicted her. They went and investigated. Now, as I said to the school people, sure, somebody could be across the street. They could be taking pictures. Well, you know, you don't want to go into a lockdown and weird out and all that. But it could have been an alumnus. It could have been somebody who had gone to that school and now they've seen a change. And I appreciate that, but we should be more vigilant. And that's really the key here, because it could be something very innocent as an alumnus, or maybe somebody just interested in the aesthetics of that particular school. It could be. Or it could be more nefarious, as in the case of what happened 2 days later in New York City. And that and what I'm revealing about the New York City incident is also not classified. I'm not discussing anything in particular about it, but it was not what I'm sharing with you is not classified. It's open source. And so, again, here we have something that more often than not, Americans are not prepared for psychologically and emotionally, and that is to do this level of combat. What Claire is talking about and what we teach, Claire, John Gondola, who's a former FBI special agent, and others, is not only the actual philosophies and techniques of Muslim Brotherhood and how they're politically infiltrating, but also the psychology behind all of this. America is not prepared, in my opinion, and Claire will jump in, but in my opinion, we're not prepared psychologically, emotionally, to deal with this level of an assault. We're a free and open society, pretty much trusting people, and we're just not used to looking, literally looking for the nefarious side. And that's what's now becoming very paramount. Again, if you read their documents, if you interview various suspects who are promoting jihad, they will tell you that there is a war. Claire used that term, and she is absolutely correct. There's a war. It's not politically correct to say, but she is correct. There is a war. It has been launched. We are fighting it, not very well, and we're losing, in my opinion.
Well, we can't continue to fight the war the way we've been fighting it. I mean, we're not fighting it.
We're not. We're watching it, and we're kind of
we don't want to be labeled haters. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, you know. And we sit back and let this just operate in our neighborhoods. And, I mean, folks, I agree. Folks need to wake up.
When we come back, we need to take a really quick break. But when we come back, let's talk about the, okay, they weren't doing anything illegal. So when you call, who do you call and what do you say? And we should do a little bit of that so people can be kind of proactive about it, huh? Because at the end of the day, if we talk to you guys for 2 hours and we still don't know what to do, we're idiots. I'd like not to put us in the lose column yet, okay? We'll be right back, and we'll get some actual tools for you when we do. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. We can't go on together with suspicious.
But we can. Good one, Bob. Okay, so Lyle, our suspicious minds. What should we do with that?
Take two aspirin and call me in the morning.
It's true.
I think we have every right to. If you're having children in school, that you go to your school kindly, calmly, cooperatively, and ask, what are the security measures? How are we keeping our kids safe? Are you aware that schools are being surveilled, and what steps are being taken to protect in that case? That was one of the discussions with the principal and the assistant principals on my report, and they laid out, for me anyway, a very clear protocol. You can do the same thing at the district level. You can always call your 911 and tell them what you suspect, and stop worrying about being a crybaby or a hollering wolf. We need to start hollering wolf a little bit more appropriately, in the sense that when we see something, we need to say something. I know that sounds trite, but we really do. We need to tell law enforcement to go and investigate these matters, and leave it up to them to determine if there is a threat or not. You also need to let your students know if you see something suspicious, go ahead and report it to your school. If they feel that they can't, they need to report it to their parents, then the parent needs to be the advocate for the child. We need to stop worrying about being politically correct. They're counting on us to be politically correct. They're counting on us to be afraid. They're counting on us to be cream puffs and not do anything to rock the boat. They're counting on that. And we are really, if you take a look at what Islam intends to do, it's very, very, very similar to where Nazi Germany was in 1939, 1940, attacking the infrastructure, attacking the culture, attacking the emotionality of the country. That's exactly what's taking place here. Again, Claire's correct. It's a war. We are at war, and unfortunately, terribly unfortunate, we have people who are afraid of saying that, and therefore they're not saying anything, or they're being, quote-unquote, politically correct. And this is just adding strength to the bad guys and creating confusion for the good guys.
Yeah, I think a lot of people actually believe that, but it's funny. Nobody wants to be the first one to pipe up, but I'll tell you what, if something bad happens because you didn't say anything, that's...
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know what you do with that.
Our society, unfortunately, has turned into a reactionary bunch that we sit back and wait for something to happen, or, so that then we can scream and holler. And like your email says, we'll all wave the flag and cry how much injustice there is, but we need to act a little quicker than that.
The other part I was kind of sad you didn't include, Lyle, was the part about how we run in and look for the rainbows and the puppies in our safe space while we eat cookies and listen to soft music with little pillows. You know, some of the college stuff that's coming out now, you know, they can't even have any kind of debates on campus because it might trigger warning or whatever it is. Somebody, it's like, what the heck are they? Well, microaggression. There you go.
Yeah, is Claire still with us? Claire, are you there? Is Claire still with us?
Claire's gazing at Mount Rushmore, I think. Either that or Obama is on there and she's going for the sandblaster right now.
Well, we just spoke to...
She's not there, so we can make up whatever we want.
We can say anything we want about Claire.
We can totally make stuff up. She's not even here.
Well, we spoke to a lady last night who just sent her son off to college, and he called her and said that the first thing they did in the first class he went to was the teacher wanted them all to... sign something or indicate how they identified themselves sexually so that she could get a handle on how to address them as a boy or a girl. And these are the kinds of things I think we're so hung up on now, and we're not paying attention to the important stuff, like how to not get blown up when you go to the mall. I mean, that's what we have to change.
You have to appreciate, Bill, that is also part of a very sophisticated and orchestrated program to not only weaken the United States, but to introduce us to a different mindset purposefully. It's part of the Marxist mindset. A good friend of mine, Trevor Loudon, has talked about this in his new movie. If your listeners will... go get it. It's very economical, and I don't get a percentage, and I'm not supporting.
And we don't care if you do. We actually like shameless promotion, so we hope you're getting a percentage. You know, let's sell it.
I need to tell Trevor then to give me a buck or two every time.
tell Trevor that's why we're buying it.
Yeah, mention my name every time, and I get a dollar.
Exactly.
But no, all kidding aside, Trevor Loudon's movie, brand new, just came out week before, Enemies Within, The Enemies Within. He has a book to that title also, but now he has a DVD. And I'm going to tell you, just like our other good colleague, Denise D'Souza, you're going to enjoy Trevor Loudon's Enemies Within and Denise D'Souza's Hillary's America. Now, I'm plugging both of those because they are in juxtaposition to one another. The research is impeccable on both of them. Both of these gentlemen, Denise D'Souza, Trevor Loudon, are impeccable when it comes to their research. People have disagreed with them, but they've never, ever, I've never heard one even radical person disagree with their research. Their research is impeccable. So I think you go get Trevor Loudon's Enemies Within, and you're going to see him describe a very sophisticated program that is Marxism that has infiltrated our country, our political structure, and our school system all the way down to the grade school level. Our children are not being taught history. They're not being taught about the Civil War, the Revolutionary War. They're not being taught what freedom is, and they're not being taught to defend freedom. You might have to stand up in the face of a bully. They're not being taught all of that. Therefore, they're being led to believe that if you are a cream puff, that's my terms, if you are a cream puff, that you're going to get along and people are going to like you and everything's okay and let's sing kumbaya. So back to what you were saying, Bill, about the sexual orientations and all this rest of the stuff, it's to break down walls and it's to purposefully cause people to not stand up and say no. That has nothing to do with what you're in here to learn. I've taught at two universities, and I got to tell you, back in the day when I was doing this, there was no way something like that would be asked because it was not pertinent. It had no bearing syllabus, on
no,
the class.
No, nobody would have even talked. I mean, seriously, you would have been laughed out.
I don't think they would have freaked out.
Well, look at Monty Python. I don't know if you're a Monty Python guy, but there's that whole skit in there about how he thinks they should have a new rule where men can have babies. He wants the right to have babies. And they're like, but men can have babies. But I should still have the right. And they go through this whole thing, and it's like, oh, man, that used to be funny, and now it's real.
It is real. I mean, look at what Hillary just said this week, I think. one of the first things she's going to do is get the federal government involved in a non-bullying program.
Oh, yeah, we listened to that on the way home last night.
That's the federal government's job, is to prevent bullying? You're right. I mean, that's where we're going.
As the oldest of five kids, that makes me want to go punch somebody, actually.
It does.
You two are fun to talk to. You're not politically correct. It's just great.
It makes me want to shove my youngest sister in the hamper and tell her I'm going to beat her up if she gets out before the babysitter calls my parents.
I put my brother in a truck tire and roll him down a hill. Come on.
This show is deteriorating really quickly. See what happened when Claire gets off, the show goes down.
We had all this pressure because Claire, you know, is going on a trip and we're jamming up her road time. Well, now, heck, we're just talking to you on Skype, so we could.
You guys are exactly right. The bad guys here, and we're talking about Muslim Brotherhood and all of their different denominations, Hamas, et cetera, they don't care about gun-free zones. They don't care about security camera zones. They don't care about unarmed security, armed security. They don't care about the unarmed security driving around in their little golf carts with a sign that says security. I mean, all of this is just it's wackadoo stuff. And they are not even interested if the security has arms.
Right.
They're armed. They don't – I mean, so – To look at security driving around in a little golf cart with a big sign that says security, and they're in shorts and tennis shoes. And
you know, that is so funny. We just saw that last week. We were, I think, coming out of a grocery store or something, and there was a little golf cart with the police lights on top, and it said security on the side. And
you're killing me, man.
I looked at that, and I said, really? I just
at the grocery store, we have like 80-year-old ladies that are driving around in the parking lot.
In a security cart. It's like, are you really going to?
I mean, if they're 80-year-old ladies from New York, I mean, they could take you with a handbag, but I don't think 80-year-old ladies in California are going to do it.
No, I think Barney Fife would be more of a deterrent than just what we have out there.
Yeah, it just doesn't scream you know, hey, we're watching you guys. I mean, it doesn't.
Well, you're right, Aaron. It doesn't scream we're serious.
Right.
It does not. It in fact, it gives just the other opinion profile, which is that we're all inclusive, that this is really a joke, and we're not taking it seriously.
Right.
In the report that I sent you, that I think you posted or referenced anyway, you'll notice that I put Pastor Carl Gallup's new book, Be Thou Prepared, on there as a suggestion. Again, I don't get a percentage. I think it's 10 bucks or something. I need to call Carl and say, hey, how about 50 cents?
You really need to get with the program.
You know something, guys? I think if we work this right, between all the people I'm plugging for all their stuff, I could retire here.
I'm telling you. See, we need to get them all online. See, and then they can plug your stuff. See, it's a big back scratching deal. Oh my gosh, we have to take a really quick break. Speaking of back scratching, I do have a little back scratcher right here. When we come back, though, we got to talk a little bit about gun free zones because, you know, for our gun haters, we don't have a lot of gun haters up north here, but for those folks that are listening that are thinking, oh, if we just did that, we'd all be better off. So anyway, we'll be right back in 2 minutes.
Places, sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces tell lies, and I got proof. Oh, yeah.
This used to be considered humor.
Why are you always on about women, Stan?
I want to be one.
What?
I want to be a woman. From now on, I want you all to call me Loretta.
What?
It's my right as a man.
Well, why do you want to be Loretta, Stan?
I want to have babies.
You want to have babies?
It's every man's right to have babies if he wants them.
But you can't have babies!
Don't you oppress me.
I'm not oppressing you, Stan. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box?
Here, I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies, not having a womb, which is nobody's fault, not even the Romans, but that he can have the right to have babies.
Good idea, Judith. We shall fight the oppressors for your right to have babies, brother. Sister, sorry.
What's the point?
What?
What's the point of fighting for his right to have babies when he can't have babies?
It is symbolic of our struggle against oppression.
Symbolic of his struggle against reality.
Man, I feel like a woman.
We've taken a bad turn. We had to get that out of our system.
Oh, gosh. Okay, thanks for having me on. I'm leaving now. There's nothing else I can do to add to this.
It's a charade.
I notice when Claire leaves, the show goes downhill.
It was all really pent up because, see, we're usually kind of like this the whole time.
Oh, you were on your best behavior with her and with me.
We were repressing. We were repressing, and it burst forth. But, you know, honest to God, that clip out of Monty Python, that's like real now.
Yeah. It's serious.
Now I'm sure we're all haters for playing that, but good Lord. In your postscript of your scary security brief, it said, the days of hiding in our safe spaces from scary things are over. Jihadists and other psychopaths that decide to waltz into your church, synagogue, and your child's school need to be met with immediate, intense, and violent resistance. Mass murderers must come to realize that entering a facility with the intent to kill masses of people will result in instantaneous death. And, I mean, it goes on, but that's what we really do have to pay attention to. That's what they should find. But now that we're disarming everybody, how's that going to be achieved?
No, well, it won't. And they're counting on that, and that's part of their motivation to promote political correctness and all the rest of that cream puffs logic, so they can waltz in. They're hoping to influence enough political individuals and law enforcement that people will just give up their Second Amendment rights. That makes it easy to take over a country. I mean, the United States, one of the reasons we've been able to maintain our level of freedoms is because of the Second Amendment. When you have a goodly number. I mean, we have about, I'm going to be off on this, I apologize, but 15 million, maybe 20 million former, current or recently former military. They're well trained. And then on top of that, you add other, you know, people who are firearmed enthusiasts and are trained. I mean, you've got an armed community, armed citizenry, and that gives anybody pause to launch some sort of annihilation, at least from the ground. But if you remove all of that, yeah, you're right. We're afraid of things that go bump in the night, and boys are being dumbed down as well as feminized. Our society is being feminized. It's not politically correct to call anybody a psychopath, even if they are. Mass murderers, we're to understand them and just, you know, put our arms around them. Well, it's just all crazy stuff. And what I was talking about in that paper, in that report, was that's exactly what they're counting on. That's what they're doing when they're conducting the surveillance. They're taking a look at your church, your synagogue, your shopping center, your school, all these soft targets. And again, soft targets is a tactical term. Meaning they're not hardened, they're not encased with armaments and layers of defense measures. So soft targets where they can come in pretty well unannounced and unobstructed and commit their mayhem. They don't care about if they die, because to them, for them to die, they've committed a successful jihad and they're going to be rewarded. So death to them is not a deterrence. But if they do know that as soon as they step onto a soft target and begin to demonstrate furtive gestures or any other movement that is hostile, that they're taken out, therefore they're not able to accomplish their goal, that's a whole different ballgame for them. And right now, they're not seeing that very much in the United States.
Well, we're looking at, like here in California, we have Proposition 57, which is parole for nonviolent criminals and juvenile court trial requirements is the name of the thing. But basically, it's looking that felons convicted of what they're considering nonviolent crimes, and I wish I could pull the list up of things that count as nonviolent.
I think one of them was kidnapping.
It's just
nonviolent.
I mean, it's completely mental. I will find it before we get out of here. Jerry Brown's thing here says, you know, Prop 57 focuses law enforcement on serious violent crime, like there are other violent crimes that are not serious. Stops wasting costly prison space on nonviolent people who can be rehabilitated, because that's been super successful, and directs savings to programs with a proven track record of stopping the cycle of crime. Because definitely letting them out is, I mean, we've seen in our community here with this prison, what is it, overcrowding, it was AB 109 was the bill, but they let a bunch of criminals out, and it's created a huge problem. So while they're busy doing all of that, gee, that doesn't open the door for the, you know, I mean, it just, that's like green light, you know, run.
Well, again, they're trained to take advantage of that.
We can
get into an entire philosophical discussion that your budget is bankrupt over there in California, that the prisons are overcrowded, so therefore to ease some of the crowding problems, but also to ease the budget, you release 5,000, 10,000, whatever. And granted, it would release some of the monies that go into holding these people. I understand that, but look at what you're doing. You're releasing people that are a threat to the community, just in a conventional sense of the word, just conventional crimes. What we're talking about, what I was discussing in that report, was not conventional crime. I'm talking about jihad. I'm talking about a war. That's what Claire discussed at the top of the show, was we are at war. It's an undeclared war still.
It is. And you know, you were talking about soft targets, schools, shopping malls, churches. You know, I can remember they've already hit those targets. I remember a shopping mall got shot up here not too long ago.
Yes.
A church, I think, over Nevada got shot up, and back east a church got shot. I mean, this is already happening, and we're doing nothing about it.
Some of that, Bill, is first of all, yes. Let me put a period there. Yes, you are correct. Completely correct. Period. Okay. I want to add to it, if I may, that while they went after targets of opportunities because it was easy, that was also a probe. They're probing to see what kind of response.
Oh, great point. Yeah.
So while your point is correct, period. Put a pause there because it is correct. You're right. They made an attack. They were successful. It worked. They accomplished whatever it was they're after. But I'm going to go a step further, again, based on writings and other interceptions of intel. What they're doing is they're probing all these soft targets, various corporations even. the famous workplace violence. That was not workplace violence.
No.
That was a target of opportunity. And they were looking also to see what kind of response there will be, not just on campus or on scene, but what kind of response there will be from the police. When you realize that in most communities, the response time for an emergency call is 5 minutes. Now, again, there's going to be exceptions. I got it. I used to be a police officer. So it's like, you know, the average time is 5 minutes. So from the time you make that phone call, dispatch, radio notifies the unit responds, gets on scene. More often than not, at best, you got 3 minutes, unless, of course, the unit's right outside your door, and that looks good. You know, the response time was 10 seconds. I mean, it was right there.
Yeah, you lucked out.
But realistically, you're looking at a 5-minute response time. Well, that is fairly fast in big communities, but do this one day when we get off the air. Somebody hold a stopwatch. And then stand in front of the person and go bang. And then start the clock. Start your stopwatch. And wait for 5 minutes before the first units or the first responders show up. What can be done in that five-minute period? A whole heck of a lot. Not only have you gone ahead and demonstrated your intent by shooting one person, but you're already inside the business, the mall, wherever. And now you've got a five-minute window that unless something supernatural occurs where there's somebody on scene already, either a civilian or a off-duty law enforcement, somebody who is armed and who knows how to use that. It's one thing to be armed, but it's another thing to know how to respond. If you don't have that and you have this little clock going, just count 5 minutes and look at how long that really, really, really is. It's just a very long time. We don't think like that because we look at movies and crimes are solved in about, I think, 40 minutes for
an
hour
show. Yeah, take
out
the commercials, right?
Yeah, you take out the commercials. I think we have about 35. You guys are in the profession. You would know better than I, but about 35 to 40 minutes, and we resolve an entire mass murder in 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So we're used to having all this happen so quickly. We've been dulled down.
Well, see,
but in reality, 5 minutes is a very long time.
See, and up here it's much, much longer because I was just looking up square miles. Okay, Siskiyou County, where John Lopez is located, 6,300 square miles. And on any given night, they have a handful of deputies on.
I remember Sheriff Lopey when he testified.
I'm sure he gave you the real stats.
I wouldn't discuss real stats, but if I had them. But what I'm saying to you is, I do recall as part of the economic fallout from what was taking place in Siskiyou County by the federal government coming in and closing off areas and draining the big lake and doing all this other stuff, it was to create economic chaos. Well, part of the chaos, if you'll allow me this, is you're going to lose services. Sheriff's departments, police departments, fire departments, they're going to have to lay people off. They're not going to be able to maintain a certain level of service. So that just adds to the problem. If you have a large county and you're fully manned, you're still going to look at a response time that could be significant. If you have that same county, same large area, but half the personnel or a third.
Sure.
Come on, just do the math.
Well, the other thing that's happening in our in these faraway places, you know, we're not big urban centers up here. Our jails are all full of felons because the prisons have released them. So if you steal a car or you do something like that, you can't be held in jail because there's no room for you. So if, in fact, the voters again vote to dump people out of the prison system in this particular state, I was just looking here at some of the stats. They're estimating, you know, 25,000 people. Off they go. It's like, well, that's terrific. Jail's full. And I guess I bring this up because that is all incredibly time consuming for law enforcement.
Yes.
So now we're not, we don't have a lot of spare time to go pay attention to all these other things. I mean, I realize they wind up having to do it all, but it just weakens everything. It's just a silly decision to make to put our resources under that type of strain. We have to take one more really fast break, and then we'll be right back. And you can say whatever you want till the top of the hour. Do you sing?
We'll be back.
It'll be all Lyle when we return. Since we successfully silenced Claire.
Wild Lyle.
We'll be right back. Sentinel Intelligence Services.
Whoa.
Lyle Rapacki, were you looking for a theme song? Because I think that's a really good one.
I think you both need help.
I already got help. Imagine before.
Did we forget to tell you that this was the program for that?
Oh, you guys have been awesome. Thank you very much.
Well, see, now that we've screwed her out, see, all we had to do was talk about Monty Python, and everything just went downhill. But
it did.
We will totally have to do this again, because obviously there's way more to discuss.
Well, let me leave you with one thing. I just got a text or an email. You know, I'm not computer literate big time, but as your producer engineer knows, I screwed up the Skype thing. But
we weren't going to say anything.
Okay, I gave you the wrong
that.
Name, so you know.
I know you. Well, I wasn't going to say anything there either. You have to give me the right number to call in.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
This week, they're going to release, WikiLeaks is going to release the rest of the emails on Hillary Clinton. So look for that big dump. It will be a huge dump that will come out just this week. And this is in conjunction with what Huma Abedin has purportedly done by putting additional documents on the former husband Wiener's list, smartphone. So there are hidden
documents. I don't know if we should call it a smartphone when it's in the hands of Anthony Weiner.
Well, that's true, too. That's an oxymoron. But she put documents and other sensitive communications on that smartphone. They're having trouble accessing it because the Department of Justice will not give a search warrant to the FBI to go ahead.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I know. Think about that. But WikiLeaks is going to go ahead and release a whole huge batch that they've been holding back on. So look for that this week and see if that happens. And if it does, that will even be more pertinent to what's taking place in our conversation. So that's just a headline there. And then if I may, and I know I'm taking the show and I don't mean to, I apologize.
No, I hope you do.
That's why you're on.
I want to thank you guys. We don't know each other. We've never met. You're not paying me a per diem either for anything.
Not yet.
Here.
We're working on it.
I know. My memo to you will come out.
Yeah,
later.
There you go.
But we've not met. You haven't asked me to do this. I just want to say all that for audience. But I want to thank you for having the foresight and the stamina to do this type of a show. So thank you very, very much. This is critical information. And you guys are making a platform that's very important. So thank you.
Well, we do. We appreciate you coming on, Lyle, and sharing with us. And we'd like to have you back maybe after the election. And
actually, yeah, that and, you know, on the emails and all these things you're finding out, we'd love to do some shows with you.
So what if it turns out Wiener sent the classified email from Hillary to the 15-year-old?
Yeah.
Let's start a rumor.
You're first.
You guys are too much.
There's so much to do.
I need to come up to see John Lopey, so somebody invite me up there to speak. I'll bring Claire. I'll bring somebody, and we'll come up and spend a couple of days, and we'll speak, and we'll teach, and see you all and hang out and have bagels and coffee. You guys do that up there in Siskiyou and Reading.
Oh, yeah. We do whatever we want. We have no supervision here, obviously, so can't you tell?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks.
Thanks
a million, and we will definitely do this again. I'll pass on your information to the other guys and have them invite you. We can't wait.
You're awesome. Thank you very, very much, all of you guys. Thanks for your hospitality.
Thanks, Lyle. You've been listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and you can send the archive of this show to your friends, and they'll learn a lot. See you next week. You're too young.